And at the same time, in the historical accounts, in the historical accounts of some of the great masters, you find a mention of a very specific master with a very specific disciple, where the master would simply give the quintessential or the pinnacle of the teachings, and not actually letting the student undergo kind of extensive learning. So there, since the teacher is very familiar to the kind of inclination and the temperament of the disciple, so, and the teacher himself highly realized because of this that he can actually impart a teaching which is so efficiently beneficial and influential to the student without the need for introducing the other parts of the teachings of the Buddha to him. So these actually can be like the dohas or the spiritual songs of the great Indian masters like Saraha and so forth, great Indian tantric adepts. So their style of teaching the disciples is that way. And that kind of tradition also was quite prevalent in Tibet as well. So whereas if you look at how the kind of the tradition of Nagarjuna in these things, we see that this tradition emphasized so much on the extensive learning. So because Nagarjuna himself actually has composed the corpuses of the teachings on emptiness, wisdom, and this, and so forth. So it is on these different versions or styles of teaching or leading the disciples that one of the great masters, one of the great Tibetan masters, he said that the teachings can be done in two ways. One, primarily in relation, specifically in relation to the very individual student, and one following a general trend of Buddhism. So this tradition, the tradition explained earlier, which is meant primarily just for an individual student, so actually, indeed, that is very powerful and very effective to that very student. So at times, even the Buddhist Shakyamuni did that way, because he actually, there's one king who happened to have killed his father, and then because of his tremendous grief over having done that, in order to console that disciple, the king here, the Buddha then said that the father and mother is to be killed. So actually he doesn't mean that, but in order to just console him and in order to benefit that very individual person, so even the Buddha led some of the students or disciples that way. And whereas the very benefit of giving or leading the student by the general trend of the Buddhism, by presenting the general trend of Buddhism, would be that this student will find no room for actually following the mistaken way, because he's highly learned as to know which is the appropriate way and which is the mistaken way. So Lama Tsongkhapa, in his one of the compositions, he said that some of the great practitioners or the single-pointed meditators, they lack extensive learning, and whereas those great scholars, they lack actual practice. So here actually Lama Tsongkhapa means that some practitioners who are single-pointedly absorbed in some kind of a very small topic of learning, so these people actually, because of not being introduced to the highly sophisticated and extensive learnings, he couldn't know how to proceed from the lower to the other to the higher path. And then there is someone who is highly learned and intellectual, and yet if he's not introduced to the how to integrate these two, these extensive learnings into one's own teachings, so there the thing is that he cannot actually integrate them well. He cannot summarize them well. It is because of this that he cannot use whatever extensive learning that he has into his in his actual daily practice. And then Lama Tsongkhapa also specifies one category of disciples who are very biased in their ways of thinking, because they are so biased to a kind of secluded tradition that they are not willing to learn the other traditions. And then Lama Tsongkhapa also goes on to specify another category of students who are lacking the power of investigation, lacking the power of wisdom. So he says that if somebody lacks the wisdom to investigate the reality, so there then we can have the problem of actually not following the extensive teachings of the Buddha Dharma, and thereby facing the consequence of not being able to follow the Buddhist paths well. So although I'm not at all highly experienced in these things, but whatever little experience that I have, so I can surely say that a greater learning would be more beneficial and helpful to one in terms of traversing through the various experiences of the Buddhist paths. So third, a teacher after having achieved then the qualities, how he performed deeds for the sake of the teachings. So this comprises of the two parts. One, how he has been a great contributor of the Buddha Dharma in India and in Tibet. So when he first arrived in Tibet, it must have been the time that Naksu Losava, the Naksu, the Tibetan translator, he must be on his way doing translation of Chandrakirti's supplement to the Middle Way. So because at that time Atisha was very much busy giving all transmissions and teachings of the Targajwala, the blaze of reasonings by Pava Viveka. So the text reads, first, at the Palace of Great Enlightenment in Bodh Gaya, he defeated three times the proponents of the inferior non-Buddhist doctrines by means of the Dharma, thus maintaining the Buddhist teachings, eliminating the taints of ignorance, misconception, and doubt. Also in regard to the teachings of his own upper and lower systems, he spread the teachings, so that he was regarded as a crown jewel beyond partiality by proponents of all factions. And then deeds, what kind of deeds he performed in Tibet. So there, his prime disciple, so though he had many disciples, the prime of all is Dromden Gyewe Jungne, Dromdenpa, who happened to be observing the layperson vow. So among his different disciples, so one follows the tradition of actually following the practice by way of extensive learning, and then the second kind of the group of his disciples follow the tradition of a more compact way of learning, and then applying them into practice. And the last one is the kind of the group following or upholding the tradition of Atisha in ways of following a very compact, in a summary way, in a summary form of form the teachings of the Buddha to apply these teachings into the daily practice rather than undertaking extensive learning. So these three lineages, they are called the lineage of extensive learning, the lineage of Lamrim, or the lineage of the stages of the part of enlightenment, second one, and the third one, the lineage of the pinnacle instructions. In general, the tradition of Adisha is called as the Kadamba tradition. So Kadamba, so Ka means the Buddha's teachings. So this tradition is called the Kadamba tradition because it has the connotation. This tradition has the connotation. This very label Kadamba has the connotation of applying whatever teachings of the Buddha there is into one's own daily practice, into one's own practice to achieve enlightenment. So even the syllable or even a letter or letter A or Ka in Tibetan, so applying that into your practice. And Lama Tsongkhapa, indeed, he is a great scholar. So he has 18 volumes of his masterpieces, although not great in number. But these books, so they are so comprehensive, very decisive, and very much picks only the hard cores of the Buddha's teachings. So if you look at the wisdom aspect of Lam Chemo, the great exposition of the stages of part enlightenment, so there you see that he has actually selected all the difficult points of Chandrakirti's clear words and supplement to the middle way and so forth. So there, and also in his eloquent speech, Lixian Yingbo, the essence of the eloquent speech. So we would clearly see that Lama Tsongkhapa has actually selected the very difficult points from the grounds of Bodhisattva composed by Asanga and the other texts. So this is his kind of characteristic, his kind of attribute. So he is always handling only the difficult points. So if once you are cleared of the doubts with the different points, then the entire path to enlightenment becomes so evident, so clear to you. And if you look at the very writings of Lama Tsongkhapa, so we can very easily make out that Lama Tsongkhapa is highly, not on top of being highly learned, he's highly experienced and highly realized being, because the manner in which he presented, the manner in which he revealed the various stages, various experiences in his different literature. And also, Lama Tsongkhapa has a quality of very unbiased and also very innocent. So, because if you look at his various writings, so the writings, the earlier writings, so where he happened to have made a little bit of error here and there, so in the literature or the writings that he did in the later part of life, so he would then make corrections, saying that, oh, I've made such and such error in such writing, in my early writing. So here, so it clearly tells how honest he is. He is a very a truth speaker. So Adisha, after having visited Tibet, and then having composed his text, the famous text, the Lamp of the Path to Enlightenment. So then the other traditions that were founded at that which are kind of contemporary with Adisha's emergence there. So his text, The Path to Enlightenment, the Lamp of the Path to Enlightenment, it has tremendous influence over all the other traditions that were prevalent at the time. So if we take the Nyingma tradition, so the root master is actually, we can trace that tradition to Chandrakshita. And then in terms of Sakya lineage, it can be traced to the Birubha, Master Birubha. And then Kagyupa can be traced to the great adept, Naropa. And then in terms of the Gelugpa tradition, it can be traced to Atisha. So because the kind of the tradition of Atisha is called the old Kadamba tradition, and the tradition established by Lama Tsongkhapa is called the new Kadamba tradition. So because the kind of the tradition of Atisha is that which emphasizes on integrating the three different teachings of the Buddha into one's own practice, and thereby trying to induce these trainings of ethical discipline, concentration, and wisdom into one's practice. And then the new Kadamba tradition, which is founded by Lama Tsongkhapa, so that very much emphasized on the sutra part. And then although we do find great practitioners in Tantra, but there they were done in a great with great secrecy. And it is on this basis that we classify the old Kadamba tradition and the new Kadamba tradition. Otherwise, the basic root, the underlying philosophy in these things, they are much more the same. The Nyingma tradition, with the Nyingma tradition, the sutra aspect of Nyingma tradition, so they can be rooted to Chandrakshita, and the tantric aspect of Nyingma tradition, they can be rooted to Guru Padmasambhava.